Welcome to the Just Life Podcast, episode 75. We are joined by Connie Jacob today, a local entrepreneur and agent of change for a more healthy culture of mental health. Our society is sick. Our young people are defining themselves by their anxieties and their depressions. Oh, I'm getting emotional. Then from their strengths and passions. What does this mean? Where did this come from? And what can we do about it? As a family, as a community, as a society? You'll find out on today's episode. So enjoy the show. Have you listened to any of our podcasts?
Yes. Yeah.
You kind of have a flavor, a sense of how they go a little bit?
I mean...
They're always different.
Yes.
People say this to me, what's your podcast about? I'm like, ugh.
Just kidding. I don't even know how to answer that. So we'll just have a conversation and we'll see where it goes. And it usually goes for about 45 minutes or so. Once we're into the groove and there's no agenda.
You don't have your... You're going to do like...
I actually... You didn't fill out a bio, did you?
Oh, I didn't?
I don't know. Did you?
Oh, I thought I did.
Was there a form? A Google form that you filled out?
Oh, maybe not.
Because when I looked, I didn't see it. And it's possible I might have missed it. And it's totally... We'll just have the conversation with her right now. So there are questions about, like, what have you done? What are some of your wins and some of your big failures? And just to kind of get a sense of who you are and what your journey's been. Now, you share... You're pretty active on social, right? And there's been a lot of revealing behind the curtain, life and how it's gone with your son. And so I kind of have a sense of how the stuff that you shared anyways, what it is that is driving you, kind of moving you forward, what inspires you, some of the things that you've decided to take on, like this whole work-life balance thing. You seem to just...
What balance?
Yeah, well, but what's so cool about... And I don't know if you're familiar too much with Connie and her story. And I think we'll just give you the mic for a little bit to set that... set the scene. A little bit about where you have come from. What some of the things are that you're now focused on and sharing with other people. Mm. So that Vern can be part of the conversation.
In the age of... sharing and creeping on people, I follow Connie on social, so I have a bit of a sense as well of, you know, a little bit about your story and that sort of stuff, and some further context would be wonderful.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I need to follow you back.
Oh, bring it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so tell us, start from what you would think is the best beginning to start from. For people who are listening to get a really good sense of who Connie Jacob is and what you're up to.
Okay. That's a really loaded question.
I know.
You know.
Welcome to the Just Life Podcast.
This is what we do.
You're right, right. Well, I've worked in youth resilience for 20 years. That's been my main focus. And, you know, been on the streets of Vancouver watching some of my youth put crack in their socks to go make a deal, like from the hardcore ghetto to suburban kids, just trying to help them be more courageous and more resilient. And I found in my work, it's been very interesting. Let's take Calgary, for example, or even Vancouver. Calgary, I've worked at Forest Lawn. And
I was in high school.
Oh, really? I love Forest Lawn High. It is actually my favorite school in the city.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
You wouldn't have heard that back in my day.
Well, those are like, it's those, I love communities that where the kids rise up, because I find, look at you, David, like I find that the kids that come from communities where there's struggle, they rise above more than the kids in affluent or suburban areas where they're in the corner rocking because they didn't get their Starbucks today. It's just a very interesting phenomenon.
Man, I didn't get my Starbucks today.
Buddy.
David's rocking in the corner.
I'm starting.
I was just like shaking my leg and I'm like, remember to like what Keith was telling us before.
No shaking of legs.
I'm banging the mic here. Oh my word. Anyway, falling apart.
It's all good. It's all good.
That's I love the way that you put that.
Well, and it's interesting as mental health issues have risen, anxiety, depression are equally the same in both demographics. Take Vancouver, for example. You know, I've been working in East Van, continuing to this day, as well as I was in at White Rock Christian School. So you have totally two different demographics.
Super polarizing.
Yeah, it really is.
I used to live in Vancouver. I lived in there in Vancouver for 15 years.
This is why I like you so much. You've lived in all my favorite places.
I just want to throw that in there to seal the deal, you know?
Seal the deal.
No doubt.
But it's interesting.
I relate to what you're experiencing because I've had friends in White Rock and I would travel through East Hastings every day for different types of work. Like I've seen it. Now I'm not intimately connected to it like you might have been, but man, it can be a dark place on both sides.
Mm-hmm. One just is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
The white picket fence hides brokenness because who do you tell if you're struggling? Who do you tell if your child is dealing with suicidal thoughts? You know, you want to appear put together. So you hide behind the beautiful home and the nice car and all the activities.
Well, it's probably like that for a lot of the kids, I would imagine, too. Before they find their voice, they're going like, they don't know what to say. They don't know how to express themselves. And ultimately, when you do share, like, oh my God, I'm dealing with these things, it's like, what are you talking about? You've got everything. That's how it was when I was growing up, when I had nothing. I looked at these kids who had everything, and I thought, like,
what do you got to complain
about? What do you got to complain about? Both your parents are there. You got food in your fridge, and your lights are on. Looking pretty good to me.
Yeah. Right?
And so, unfortunately, I didn't have, at that time, the level of compassion for the kids that were set up as I do today.
Or even awareness of what you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, I had no idea
what it was.
Yeah, because to me it was all superficial. It was all surface. It's like, no, I want what you have, so you don't have a right to complain, right? Like that. So
really shows you that stuff doesn't cure these things in our hearts. You know, anxiety, depression, these things are there on both ends, but for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a real awakening for me to watch that in my work. And then in our own home, didn't really realize how real this was until my own son was struggling with suicidal thoughts at age 8.
At 8 years old.
Insane.
Struggling with suicidal thoughts. Like, that blows my mind. My kids are turning 8 this month. My little girl, my little boy is, they're girls and boys, man, they are so different from one another. The boys don't necessarily say what's on their mind or maybe don't know how to say it. And the girls wear their emotions on their sleeves, right? For the most part, they are more willing, if you give them the space, to share what's going on. And my little girl would share about her concerns for not having enough time to finish what's needed at school in grade 2. I'm like, what is going on right now?
Mm-hmm.
Having conversations with the teachers and making requests, like she would like to practice some of this stuff. And but here's the really interesting thing is that it was self-imposed.
Mm-hmm.
So the teacher, there was no expectations from the teacher other than, listen, if you're in class, pay attention. Ignore your friends who are joking in the corners. Pay attention. Because there's stuff to do. There's stuff to learn. And but then when school's done, there's no homework. There's none of that. But my little girl created that and very distraught by it too. Like, you can really see the concern. It was visceral for her. Mm. And that's at 7 years old. Like, where is that coming from?
Yeah, you really wonder, where do these things come from?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it, and I totally see the it can go down a path, and it can be a really scary place for these young minds.
How does a, like, I'd love to hear more about your story. Like, how does a, for me, I'm thinking like, wow, because my kids are already 9 and almost 12. So, you know, you think as a parent, you have pretty good open dialogue, and you have, because we've had, we have these conversations in our house. I'm just trying to think of like where, like how does a, an 8-year-old even get the context for like what suicide is? Like, I'm living and I want to die, or like, just, can you say some, you know, say a little bit about what that was like for you guys and what you discovered?
Yeah, for sure. I know for our son, he was diagnosed with anxiety and depression at age 6, and also oppositional defiance and ADHD. He was a really hard young child. Even as a baby, he was very hard. And you can go into, you know, the birth. A lot of people will ask you, what was your birth like? We had a very traumatic birth. I almost died. He had the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck. I was passed out. I didn't actually even hear him be born. I just woke up in the hospital the next morning going, oh my goodness, I have a child in this hospital somewhere.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. Holy smokes.
So apparently those things can affect their brain.
For sure, yeah.
I also had a lot of postpartum depression. I had just moved from Vancouver to Calgary, and that was depressing for me. I had a business in Vancouver. I had my own dance studio in East Van, had a warehouse. We hosted battles, and I loved it. It felt like that was my dream. And
why did you move?
Yeah, why did we move?
Well, it seems like silly.
Doesn't it? It was my husband. My whole family had passed away. So I'm an only child, and it was my mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. And everybody died except for my mom. Cancer, old age, just.
Right.
And so my husband was like, we should move to Calgary and be with your mother. And of course I want to be with my mom, but I'm thinking I'm living my dream here.
Yeah.
I've built my business. Yeah. And you know what sacrifice it takes to build a business. And so we moved out here when I was 7 months pregnant, and I didn't know anybody anymore, even though I grew up here. I was depressed. I just, me and my wiener dog, I was so lonely. My husband was, we were here in the boom. He's so busy working all the time. So you put all of those factors together of grief and just feeling lost of purpose, you know, and then a hard birth. And, you know, my life, you know what it's like having a newborn. Your life is completely.
Yeah, it's turned upside down.
And so you're, there's no foundation.
You don't
even
know it's turned upside down. You think you're upside right side up, but you're really upside down left, and you're like, you just don't know how to make sense of anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I feel like just not only the birth, but the attunement that my son needed. So there's a lot of studies on resilience with how much attachment and attunement a baby has in their first year. And of course I loved my son. I mean, I would have done anything for him. I took care of him. I smiled at him. I loved him. But the attunement that they need for
it's
those...
It's energetic.
Yes. And the mirror neurons. Like, I looked past him a lot of times. Went through the motions of my day because I'm just trying to get through the day. And so that part of his brain that just kind of comes alive when we attune... didn't happen. And so there's a doctor, Gabor Mate, he's from Vancouver. He attributes ADD to attention deficit. It's a lack of attunement that they get in their first year. And it doesn't develop that part of the brain where they can begin to problem solve. Even though our prefrontal cortex doesn't develop till we're 25, and that's where we problem solve and reason, the part that can really help that develop doesn't happen at the same rate as, say, someone who did get attunement.
That's amazing.
I realized through my son's journey, after, because now he's turning 13 this weekend.
Oh, wow.
And he's thriving. He's doing so well. And I believe it's because we did attune to him. It's never too late. The attachment, the connection that you have with your children, it can happen at any time. So nothing is written in stone. And that has given me a lot of hope and perspective that I want to pass on to parents.
You said it so well. It's not written in stone yet. We will carve it out and hold it up and have it be the metaphorical Ten Commandments of, you know, this is why we're where we're at, and feel like it's, we just can't change it. But it's actually not written in stone.
It's not.
It's so malleable. It's more like clay. A clay that hasn't been set yet, actually never sets. And so there's always opportunity to change it and manipulate it and make it something different. Not necessarily better, but elevating it, improving on it, adding to it, or removing from it. We make our lives feel so finite so often.
We do.
And I think that's the...
And so absolute.
Yeah, totally. Mm. And our kids, so I do believe this is an inherent tendency. As human being, we want to be safe, and we want to know that it's predictable, and that we can, when it's predictable, we know what the outcome is going to be, and so there's a measure of certainty there. But that's actually it's our worst enemy.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm fascinated most by what you're saying so far is... the idea of, you know, we all kind of know in today's world, like, how important early development is, and, you know, the kids are, you know, babies are becoming present already, like, in the womb. And obviously when we were growing up, that wasn't a thing. It was sort of like, yeah, they don't know what the hell's going on. So, you know, like that, right? Like, it's kind of a joke, but what you're saying is so critical. The fact that, you know, being with the kid, going through the motions, kind of looking past. So many parents are doing that today, and they don't get that the mirror neurons you mentioned as well, like, kids are picking up on things energetically. They're seeing things, they're listening to things, they're aware of so much more than they're even aware that they're aware of, you know what I'm saying? And there's so much development going on all the time. The cliche is that they don't come with a manual, so it's like how do we make a difference, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's dead on. We're present, but not present.
Mm.
And I think just being present has completely changed the game for my son.
Mm-hmm.
Me choosing to slow down my life. I am a real go-getter.
Right. Okay, I love what you're saying. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off there, but it's so critical. So the thing that I've been really examining in my life right now is the difference between content and context. Like, actually having a context for what's being said, versus just listening to what people are saying or reading something, going, yeah, you know, that's interesting. You know,
intellectually, I get it.
I'm going to be more present with my kids. Connie, can you tell us, what the hell does that actually even mean? What does it mean to be present?
It means slow the fuck down.
Mm. Slow down.
Slow down. It means that, you know, when we're home, we're home.
Mm-hmm.
Or having, if you work at home, having boundaries. You know, when am I focused? Because we have to be focused, and we have to make money. We have to go to work. But I think that as I've been studying more now, helping parents figure out and watching our journey, what really changed, it honestly is getting boundaries around this is work, now this is home. And my kids know that the difference. Not being so crazy everywhere.
Right.
Honestly, I know a lot of people hear this and they go, well, that's too simple. And it really is.
Right.
It's the simple.
We're used to complicating things. That's the problem.
We're addicted to that. We're addicted to the hustle, the rush, and all the messaging, and the phone is always there. So I would say, like, what I'm hearing behind what you're saying is, like, being present takes a level of patience and a practice.
Yes. And trial and error. Oh, that didn't work. This structure doesn't work. Let's re-examine. There's no right or wrong, and we don't have to get it right all at once. Mm-hmm. But we do need to be committed to the journey.
Yeah, like, I tried that once. It didn't work for me. So, you know, pack it in. Try something new. Why don't we just revert back to what we were doing? That was fine, you know?
Yeah, totally. It worked.
Quote, unquote. It worked. We got through it.
Barely.
Well, and I hear parents say that to me all the time. So our big philosophy is bring them closer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I heard in the hospital. So when my son was suicidal, we took him to the hospital, and he was there for 3 weeks. And the psychologist asked me, what do you do when your son is throwing fits of rage? Because that's what depression looked like for him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just, this kid is rebellious. There's something wrong with him. But he was so depressed. He was so dysregulated. He did not handle these big emotions, that he would lash out. He would threaten our lives. He would swear. He would throw things. So she said, what do you do when he does that? And I said, well, I send him to his room. I mean, that's how I was raised. Don't you dare act like that in my house. Mm-hmm. But then she said, oh, no, you never send the hurting away from you. You bring them closer. Mm-hmm. And at first, I had no idea what that meant. I didn't have any context. My upbringing does not understand that whatsoever. And I could feel my dad in heaven saying,
they're there.
What are you talking about? You give that boy a spanking, you know? Like,
give him a whatso.
And so I, for the next year, when I brought him home, would keep him in the same room. That's what bring him closer looked like for us. Keep him in the same room. And I would try to put my arm around him. Sometimes he wouldn't let me because, well, he's like, what's this new method?
Yeah, what are you doing?
You're trying to control my behavior.
Yeah. Stop suppressing me.
And that is totally where he's coming from. Mm. I've learned by bringing him closer that my son just does not like to be imposed upon. Don't tell me what to think. Don't tell me how to feel. If you're just trying to make me comply, then I'm going to show you how much I don't appreciate that through my words and my actions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I would just keep him in the same room and I'd start getting curious about what's underneath this anger, what's underneath the rebellion or the unwillingness to comply, and then seeking to understand where he was coming from and meet him where he is. Mm-hmm. And I've had parents say to me, I've tried that. And I'm like, for a day?
Yeah. Well, and again, yeah. No, this is perfect because, again, their version of I've tried that, there's a really fine line between, you know, bringing them in, being with them, being present, and fixing and changing.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a fine line between, well, he should be this way. So, you know, I'm going to lean him into that direction rather than just letting him, you know, just being with him and letting him kind of work it out and learning to find his voice and learning how to express himself and actually say what he's dealing with and like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big thing. I don't think anybody likes to feel like they're being controlled. And that's one of my big things.
Do you like to be controlled?
That's my favorite thing.
Yeah, nobody likes to be controlled. And I think the realization I came to was that we don't control our children.
Totally.
No one controls me. I control me. And I realized that once I started to manage my own dysregulation, I didn't realize how dysregulated I was. I wanted him to change for me. Cool. I didn't want to go to the grocery store and have the fruit section be a parkour course for the eighth time.
Right.
I was tired of the looks. I was tired of the judgment. I'm like, you need to change so I look better.
Right.
And as much as I hated to admit that, that was what was going on inside.
Well, isn't that the thing that we're not doing, right? It's always so easy. This is such a metaphor for life. This never send the hurting away. You need to bring them closer. So isn't that what we do in the world, right? It's like you look at politics, you look at whatever, pick anything, whatever it is, whatever subject you want to pick. And we look at that thing, you know what? That's the problem. That thing doesn't work. That thing makes me feel uncomfortable. You know, rarely are we even willing to look over here, right? Rarely. When you're dealing with things with your kids, it's like, well, that can't be my fault. You know, like, what's wrong with this kid?
Yeah, where did he learn that?
Yeah, where did he learn that from?
It's my spouse.
Yeah,
no?
it's unbelievable.
Totally. If he would do his thing, we would all be good.
I catch myself while I'm talking to my kids about, you know, how they're being. And then I stop myself and I go, like, look, I totally get that you got that from dad. So why don't we support each other and call each other out on this stuff? Because I got programs running, man. Like, I got stuff going on over here that I'm looking to explore. And it just shows up, and then you guys adopt it, and then I make you wrong for it. It doesn't really work, you know?
So true.
I'm always impressed by your awareness of that when you're talking to your kids. I would say 9 times out of 10, if it's it's coming from a stop doing that, you're driving me crazy. It is not the awareness of like where that's coming from and where that's not there at all.
Yeah. And thanks, man.
Yeah. It really takes something to see the mirror.
Mm.
The mirror is there. And I see the mirror when, you know, they're doing really great things.
They totally get that from me.
Yeah, they totally get it. We're damn good parents. So great. Fuck,
yeah,
man.
That's great.
The fallacy of that, the uncomfortable nature of looking in the ugly mirror. Oh, that two-headed monster. you don't want to see it.
You know, and another thing that I'm present to right now is as I look through my own journey and I go through the air quote struggles that I'm going through right now in my life, the way that I find comfort in my situation now is I look back in the past and think about, like, you know, if I didn't go through this one thing, like, this other thing wouldn't have occurred. Like, I wouldn't have been exposed to that, or I wouldn't have met that person, or whatever it is. So I find it so interesting for you that you were on this journey of supporting kids and discovering all these things, and then you then had to go through it firsthand. Like, you had to go through that. There's more at play than what we see. It had to go that way for you.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's incredible.
And it's really impacted the way I look at resilience and mental health. And I see now the gaps where we do push people away.
Mm-hmm.
I see that this generation, you know, when you have 20% of kids who go to the hospital not getting the proper treatment that they need, you see 55% of young people right now, young people who go to the hospital, 55% of those visits are because they're suicidal. This is from a stat from Raising Canada. It's a study on resilience from the University of Calgary. And I'm like, this generation is showing us a mirror, not only of ourselves, but as us as a whole. And it's showing us how sick our society actually really is.
Mm.
And how we have an opportunity when we see stats like that to say, well, let's look at what kind of culture are we creating? Are we creating culture of mental health? The reason why we have mental illness is because it was created socially. Well, then socially we can create mental health by bringing people closer and maybe defining what does that actually look like instead of just sending people away. There's even a study, kids who go to the principal's office too much, kids who get suspended, they're more likely to end up in jail because they define themselves that way.
Right.
I had to take my son out of school just this last April because he was getting sent to the principal's office every day for silly things, like just making a disruption in class. Because, again, don't impose on me. Don't make me comply. And if you do,
I'll show you.
Yeah. So off to the principal's office he's going. And I'm like, you know what? My son's not a bad kid.
Yeah.
I don't want him to define himself as a bad kid. Totally. So therefore, you're coming home so that you remember who you really are.
Love that. There's so much here. You talk about resilience. So I'd love to drill down a little bit about, again, people hear the word resilience and think they get what that means. And I would assert that you don't. Or there's deeper.
Or you think you know what it means.
Yeah, there's deeper looking there. And then I want you to, if you can, talk a little bit about these cliches that you hear. Things like, you know, what's with these kids today? Like, it's easy for me to pretend, or I've done such a great job over these years of burying down all of my feelings and all of my stuff. So I can look at these weak, pathetic kids of today and go, oh, they've all got feelings. There's something wrong with these kids, because it wasn't a conversation 40 years ago. So what do you say to people when they pull things like that out? Nah, that's just kids today. They're weak.
No, everything that they are is what we've passed down.
Mm-hmm, totally.
And when you think about how much we've had to unlearn the way we were parented,
mm-hmm.
and how our parents were just doing the best they could, and their parents were just doing what they knew. And
well, they were coming out of the wars.
And yeah, like,
depressions, Great Depression. Like, there was some big shit going on.
So we're almost like dealing with the hangover of that, really.
We are.
If you look at it.
Yeah, sociologically, that's exactly what it is. And so in order to make sense of this generation, you have to make sense of past generations. And I feel like we're at a real interesting time in history where we are able to really see a great big picture. And we can decide now, we can unlearn what we think is normal parenting or normal. It blows me away that we just think anxiety is normal now.
Right? Like, everybody's just suffering from anxiety. Well, it's just part of, you know.
Just life. I just spoke at a youth camp, and I could not believe how much these youth wanted to define themselves as depressed, anxious. And when I dared say, you are more than that, I want you to discover who you really are this week, and I want you to define yourself as something different. There was opposition to that.
Yeah, don't tell me.
Yeah.
I'm depressed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Blew me away. They're now wanting, and I feel like a little bit of that is because they're like, but if I take away, I am depressed, then who's going to pay attention to me?
Yes. Totally. 100%.
I was just going to ask, why do you think that is? And it is because we are so disconnected. Our young people are looking for attention through our digital devices, our entertainment through our digital devices. Like everything is being facilitated through, and it's artificial. It's not real. And so the real connection comes from, now I'm concerned for you, but I'm concerned for you for the wrong reasons.
I have a saying that stirs people the wrong way, but I believe it. We create one another by how we treat one another, how we see totally. One another.
Well, again, that reveals something. They don't want to look at that mirror, right? Mm-hmm. And so again, you become the bad guy for being bold enough to stand in that.
Yes.
Because you're not just saying, well, all of you guys, by the way, you're included in that conversation, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then the lack of boundaries that we have as humans. We teach people how to treat us. And if we don't have boundaries in place, then we allow people to stay in their cycles. For my son, I had to have boundaries of, you cannot talk to me like that. But I am committed and connected to you. You belong in our family. And so it was this, it's this weird dance.
A healthy tension. Oh, man.
So we teach people, say that one more time. We teach people
how to treat us.
Totally. So an example would be, like, I often hear people in business or whatever, they'll complain about, oh, you know, either their boss or a client. Can you believe they texted me like on Saturday at noon or 7:30, 8 o'clock on Thursday evening? I go, okay, great. Did you respond? And they go, well, yeah.
But why?
Right? Like, there's no conversation with the client to go, hey, by the way, just so you know, like, you know, I'm actually like, the office is closed at 5. So, you know, you can text me in the evening, but just don't expect to hear from me until Monday morning. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Right? So you're the one opening the door all the time, but then you get to complain about it.
Well, and there's power now because you have decided for yourself what the boundaries and the control mechanisms are that we react to and or not react to.
And there's a fear there to actually say something and use your voice. You're not being whatever, rude or whatever it is. You're just creating boundaries. You'll get so much more respect from people.
The irony in it.
Eh? Yeah, it's yeah. crazy. You're afraid to like offend them or scare them off. And really they're going to be like, oh, wow. Like,
he just said that
I'm
to
now
me.
Way the? More attracted to you and I don't know why.
Well, and with boundaries, it's important. You can say like, look, you are not going to treat me like that. That's one way to put it. Or if you speak to me that way, or if you text me on a Saturday night, just so you know, I will not be responding. Sounds a little bit nicer.
Yeah.
And it says what I'm going to do rather than what you should do.
Mm. For sure. It's all, well, when you're grounded, it's all in the delivery. It's all in tonality. It's all in energy. You know, you can, even when you're texting the person, like there's a way in which you know, there's a way.
Is that a recent text?
Yeah. I'm speaking from experience here. But yeah, there's a way in which that, you know, you present it to people and you're just straight with them versus being like, listen, I'm so sick and tired of your crap and your text, right? Like that. Of course, you're going to get a different response from somebody when you're, you know, feeding it to them versus offering like, this is just how it is for me. It might work for you, might not. That's okay. This is just how I do it.
Yeah. And right? This is what I will do if you do that. So you're not controlling anyone. You're only controlling yourself.
100%.
And you're
I love that
by example.
So subtle.
They actually now see how an effective way of operating looks like.
Mm.
They might not be aware of it, but they'll see it and they'll see how well it worked, and then they will try it themselves. Like that's inherently just how we operate. We mimic, right?
Yeah, for sure. Especially with kids.
Yeah.
So Connie, can you drill down a little bit on like what's resilience, particularly with kids? Like why would a kid want to build resilience? What does that do for them? What does it even mean?
So resilience is the ability to bounce back when things are tough or when you hit a situation that's hard. Now for an 8-year-old, that might be that, you know, you struck out at 3 strikes, you're out. It's like, ah, how do I deal with that?
Like, I'm never doing that again versus, oh, trying again.
Try again. And so we have a society where, you know, you can hit the ball as many times as you need to. That doesn't teach resilience.
Right.
We give kids chances upon chances upon chances, and they don't get to learn from their natural consequences. We buy them whatever they want instead of saying, here, like with my kids, I give them an allowance and I teach them how to save up for things, not this instant gratification. Those things teach, you know, the hard things, right? The resilience to push through and not always have life go the way you want it to.
So again, this is, I love this. So again, you're pointing to like the parent. Like I know for me, I'm only 35 and my kids are already like, my son's already 12. And so I didn't have things growing up. And I know that especially earlier on in my parenting, it was like, oh, you're going to get whatever you need, whatever you want. In other words, why don't we give all of the kids a ribbon? And I know that that is a fine line right there, right? That's a conversation that people are like, oh, don't go there. But what you're saying is no, there's like, there's actually, there's value. There's a lesson to be learned here. So how do you start to navigate that conversation with your kids and actually teach them? Like, no, it's important that you actually lost the game today or, and that you show up at practice on Monday. Like, how do you start to have that conversation?
Well, you definitely want to teach your kids what your values are. So I'm always telling parents, make sure you know what your values are.
Yeah,
like totally. Tenacity, showing up when it's hard. I taught a dance class 15 minutes after my dad passed away. I showed up even though I didn't have to show up. And I wouldn't expect anyone else to do that, but just this art of being able to push through things. And I have conversations with my kids that builds character.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a word I don't hear anymore.
Right, no kidding.
Character.
Unless you're playing video games.
Do you find ways to anchor that to something so that they can maybe have like a reference? Or how do you create a reference for, you know what I'm saying? Because it's so, maybe it's really hard for the kid to see like, well, no, I keep going to the spelling test. Every week we have to do a spelling test. And every week I don't, you know, I spell 2 out of 10 words. Forget it. I'm just done with this. So how do you anchor them to like what's possible and how valuable it is to just keep, hey, you know what? Just keep practicing. What?
Right. So I bring my kids back to courage. That's one of my values. Like it's courageous to keep doing that, even though you don't feel like you're getting anywhere. If you're in school, you have to do these things. That spelling test doesn't define you, but courage does. It takes courage to take that test. It takes courage to see past situations that are hard. So I'm building courage in them rather than smarts. And I think it's important when it comes to kids that we don't just, you know, we don't award them all the same prize. We tell them, like, I was the slowest runner in my school. I mean, I was pathetic. I never got first place ribbon just for trying. But my gym teacher always said, Connie, I noticed every time you got out there and you ran anyways. That's impressive.
Yeah, totally.
That says something about the willingness to do it despite what you might think the outcome is going to be.
For sure.
Because it's not about the outcome.
Yeah.
And the other thing with that, Connie, is that there are things that you were, you know, air quote, the best at that the best runner couldn't shake a stick at, you know?
Yeah. Like dancing.
Yeah. Like that's the other thing is like, wow, you know, Connie's such a great dancer. We should go race Connie. Because I know I'll kick her ass at that.
And then we dance battle after.
That's right. Yeah, that's great.
Get him when he's tired.
Yeah. No, I was actually joking because you know what's funny is when I was in high school, I played football and my coach always used to tease me about how slow I was. Because I was like one of the guys, but I was like what they call a skill position, but I was slow. I was really slow. Yeah, it was one of the running jokes on my team. Yeah.
You should have taken up dancing.
Yeah, I should have been a dancer. Would have been easier on the head.
Connie
too,
still teaches lessons.
Is that right? Oh, wow. Lessons. Well, we'll definitely have to look at that because, yeah, anyway. Yeah. Where are we at, Keith?
We're at 43.
Okay, nice. Cool.
So we got a little peek in behind the curtains with family. And it's an ongoing, ever-evolving commitment to just keep going and keep doing the things that we know are important, and sometimes they can be an impossible task. And I really appreciate the stories that you share over social and helping people get a new context for this type of stuff in their own worlds. Share a little bit about what your mandate is. Like there is a particular thing that you are committed to in creating in the world? And what is that?
Well, it's connection and mental health. Seeing families not settle for what they just see. Not the status quo. Like, why are we settling for it? If your kid's struggling in school and they're hitting their heads against the wall, there's so many other options than just going to school now. I've decided to world school my kids. That is a commitment that we have for the next 6 years of my oldest son's life and 4+ for my youngest. You know, the world is becoming more, it's harder to get into university. It's harder to just like, the competition is huge. And I don't want my kids to fall into just that normal rat race of what are my marks? What are my marks? So my husband and I, we've completely simplified our life. And we are now like committed to traveling a lot during the year and taking our kids with us and allowing the world to teach them instead of just traditional schooling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. We don't travel as much yet, but we homeschool. We do the same sort of thing because, to your point, where I originally came from was probably rebellious, like toward the man, the system, and being like, whatever, it's not, you don't need that crap, it's outdated, whatever. And I've shifted the context around that, and for me it's ultimately about like being with my kids and having them learn real life, to your point. And also I just feel like it just makes more sense to me that I spend more time with my kids than the government. Like, it just makes sense to me. I don't know if that's crazy, but for me to spend 2 hours a day with my kids and them to spend 10, it doesn't work for me.
It's big, you know, and people, like, every family is different, but totally. I just know for us, like, that's something that we've noticed. And my son is thriving because we've taken him out of school. It wasn't working for him. He's not willing to comply with a system. So as soon as you, I think he's a really great entrepreneur in the making. And so that's one of our things. And then another one is I realize that we're putting up with far too much, and I want to help families. I want to help families see everything A to Z, what we did to help him.
How do you mean we're putting up with too much? What does that mean?
Well, like with depression and anxiety, we're treating it just like, well, that's our day. Again, it's not, and nothing is written in stone. The brain is moldable. It's not plastic, but it's moldable. And it tells me that, you know, everybody has a chance to rewrite stories that they want rewritten. And I wanna help those families. We have National Hope Talks going into schools, really trying to help with the school system to create places of mental health and connection. And so that's kind of my mandate right now, is really trying to assist where I see the world needs the most help, which is school, workplace, and family.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
Where can people find you?
ConnieJacob.com. That's my website. And I do a blog every week where people can read about tips on how to help your family, what we're doing. There's also... my book coming out, Bring Them Closer. It's coming out this fall.
Awesome.
Great. So,
and that really just takes everything we've talked about and just dives in really deep. And then I created an online course too, because I just wanted things to be accessible to families. I had to scrounge for information when we were in crisis. I just don't want anyone to have to pay tons of money or look online. When you're in crisis, you have no time to look anywhere.
Yeah, and you might be getting the wrong information at the wrong time.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. It's always time and it's always money. It's like, oh, I've got this problem. Well, here's the solution. Now we just need $10,000. And it's like, oh, okay, great. You know.
So I actually don't have a solution.
Yeah, totally. So I love that, making it accessible, and that's fantastic. So that was episode 75 with Connie Jacob. Thank you so much for joining us. I feel like I grew leaps and bounds just being in your presence. You have such a great energy about you. And I can just tell everything that you share comes from an authentic drive to make a difference for people. And particularly from coming from your real live experience in the world, having dealt with this and seeing what's possible on the other side with your son. It's really inspiring. So I appreciate you being so vulnerable and sharing. and being on this bold endeavor that you're on. So today, you know, what I really got out of the episode is something that's a real staple for me here is never send them away. Like, never send the hurting away. Bring them in closer. Because that just seems to be the thing that we do. Mm-hmm. When things aren't working, we just turn our back. So being resilient and being patient when you're being present with people and actually practicing and trying new things on to make a difference rather than just falling into the status quo. So that was episode 75. I know you all got lots out of it because I did, and I know everything. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Awesome.
Like, clearly if I got something out of it, you did.
Yes.
I know you.
I know you.